You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been clear for takeoff.
Whatever it takes.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Kapper, along with Cliffy D. Welcome to 2018, the first one of season number three.
Season three. How exciting is that? I didn't even think we'd get past season one, to be honest with you.
I had so many problems with you. I was so close to firing you.
I'm a bit of a diva. I can't lie. I like what I like. But we found compromise. We made it work because that's what friends do. They make it work.
That's right. That's right.
And we're here to entertain you good people as always. And I am so humbled that we get the chance to do so. And let's just get into it. Let's get entertaining.
Hey, you know, yeah, like I said, we're going to go into 2018. We're this close to hitting 50. And it seems a lot of the shows are really promoting as the 100th, we won't get to 50 this year, to 100 this year, but still we're that close.
Unless we do a podcast like twice a week.
Yeah. It is in the middle of the off season. We are coming up in a couple of weeks to the CFL draft, and that'll be another show. But we were able to talk about, the free agency, and we had an interview that we did with Davis Sanchez. He was gracious enough to come back on the show, and we'll be running that and speaking with him in the next couple of minutes. But there are a couple other things that we just want to go over before we get to that conversation. But first, overall, Cliff, for you right now as an Owls fan in the off season, how do you feel? It can be about anything, and that's why it's an open ended question.
Well, listen, if we're gonna just we take a look at the team that went 3-15 last year, you have nowhere to go but up as far as I'm concerned. You really can't fall much further. Now, I say this, and last year I said that last year, actually, and the Alouettes would always, just when you think they hit rock bottom, would always find a new depth to lower themselves down to. And
what,
at the end of the day,
the last week of the year versus Hamilton,
for example, firing your head coach and your defensive coordinator mid-season two is always a good way to make sure that you hit rock bottom, or at least tumble towards it.
Beauty.
So, and of course, it's always fun being the butt end of everybody's jokes, because everybody on social media just loves to harp on the Owls and just how pathetic they are and what a dumpster fire they are and so on and so forth. But, changes happen, especially when you go 3-15. You can't help but make changes because it's clear that what was happening just wasn't working. So, yeah, you got to make changes, and with the hopes that things can only get better, because at this point, they really, truly can't get worse. So Montreal made those changes. They got a whole new coaching staff. And I've got to say, we talked about it last time we talked about Mike Sherman being hired, but we didn't get a chance to really delve into the coaches themselves. And we'll do that in a future episode. But I've got to say, the coaches that we have in place right now, I'm feeling optimistic about that. I mean, it's going to take time like anything else. I don't think we're going to see a complete 180 like the Toronto Argos did last year, because with all due respect to the coaches that have been hired by the Alouettes, they're not Mark Trestman. They're not Jim Popp. And to suggest that Montreal is going to go from a 3-15 record to appearing in a Grey Cup game, I say never in the CFL, but at the same time, let's be realistic and let's just hope that we can field a competitive team. I think that's really not too much to ask for.
No, I agree with you on that one. And it's tough. I mean, I'm looking at some of the players that the Alouettes have released recently, right before free agency and stuff like that. You know, Kyrie St. Bayer, I mean, to me, that's a big blow. And how some of this stuff that's been going down doesn't really sit right with me. But the way I think of it is this, Cliff. You know, if you follow the Toronto Raptors as an example, you know they did have to get rid of some of their name players, but they were able to bring other players in through free agency, and look where the Raptors are right now. So anything, you know, they're top of the NBA in the Eastern Conference, very good shot of going far in the playoffs. So anything is possible. Changes are going to occur. You know, I think the first thing that the Owls need to do, Cliff, when it comes to the 2018 season is first, A, break the losing streak, and B, break the road losing streak. And it's, hey, they could easily do it in week one because they're in BC. So anything is possible. They could totally wipe that slate clean.
So. No, it's like I said, there's so much right now is up in the air. And I say that as both a good thing and I don't want to say a bad thing necessarily, but it's just, it's a thing right now. You just don't know what's going to happen. Like there's so many, like you can't automatically assume the Alouettes are going to be the smoldering wreckage that everybody made them out to be last season, because last season is last season as far as I'm concerned. Now we're moving forward. Yeah. We've got, like I said, new coaching staff, new players have been added, old ones have been cast aside. So changes are being made. If nothing else, changes are being made with the Alouettes, and whether or not they're going to work, only time's going to tell. It's just too soon at this moment to say that, yes, these were great moves, or no, these are terrible moves. It's so hard to say right now. All we can do is just keep the hope, keep the faith that the moves that were made will make this team better. That's really all we can hope for at this point. We can't hope for 18-0 season. We can't hope for an automatic Grey Cup berth. Even asking this team to make the playoffs in 2018 is still a reach as far as I'm concerned. I think it's doable. I think with the talent that's been added right now, I definitely think at least appearing in the playoffs is definitely something to consider. But again, all of this is still unknown until training camp starts. So again, so much is up in the air, but I'm choosing to remain positive, choosing to remain hopeful that the moves that have been made by this organization now are to improve this team and make them an overall better football club. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that you're talking about training camp. The Alouettes had an announcement, and I thought the announcement was going to be about whether they're going to have their mini camp in Florida again this year. But the Alouettes had an announcement that now I was trying to figure this out, and I failed miserably at this. Maybe you know at the top of your head, but I know that actually this is the first time ever, I think according to the Owls, that the team is going to be holding training camp in Montreal. Now, the last time that they actually had anything of any sort when it came to training camp in Montreal was the, I think it was a scrimmage day during training camp. And I think that was 2007. I think it was 2007.
Well, and let's not forget the first year that the Alouettes came back in 1996, they did have training camp at John Abbott College. I know because I'm an alum from there, so I definitely remember covering that for the school newspaper. They did have training camp, but ever since then it was always going to be held outside of the city. So this would be the first time for sure that's going to be held at Olympic Stadium.
Yep, here it is, June 17th, 2007 is when they held an open practice over at Percival Molson.
Yeah, no, that's, like I said, this is something I've said for so many years, is that day one of training camp should be in Montreal itself, if nothing else. Like, I understand and I can appreciate why they would want to have it outside of the city, because you got a bunch of players coming in. Sometimes it's their first time in Montreal, and they realize that there's all sorts of vices, shall we say, that are very readily available in Montreal itself. So I can understand and appreciate why they would want to have training camp as far away from that as possible. But you also do have a capable facility in Montreal at the Olympic Stadium. I mean, that's where the team has their administrative offices. That's where their locker rooms are, their training facilities there. Pretty much everything to do with football operations is at Olympic Stadium as it stands right now. Right. So logically, it does make sense to have training camp there.
And they did, for a point last year, they actually did open it up when they allowed the fans to go into the Olympic Stadium when they were practicing it, right? I think it was right after the announcement, if I'm not mistaken, that they had that, I think, a three-year announcement, three-year agreement with the Olympic Installations Board that they were going to be able to have their practices there. It will be – I I kind of agree. I liked going out to Bishop's. I mean, I think I only did it twice in all the time that they were there. But it'll be a lot easier just being able to take the metro or to take a car or take a bus and go down to the Olympic Stadium and then head back to do whatever you have to do.
Absolutely. And I think that to me is going to be huge. Being able to go via public transportation, like I said, the metro stops right there at Olympic Stadium. So yeah, just wherever it is you're coming from, you just hop on the metro, take it down to Pinneuf. You get off there, the stadium's right there. Walk in, see practice. I think that's fantastic. And like you said, once practice is done, you head back and do whatever it is you have to do. And to me, I think it's going to be great to get fans excited, get them interested in the Alouettes again, because let's face it, driving out to Lennoxville, I always enjoyed it. I know you've enjoyed it a couple times too, but your casual fan may not want to make that kind of investment, so to speak, as far as time and effort goes to go and see the Alouettes essentially practicing. I mean, let's call it what it is. That's what training camp is. And it's basically them practicing. It's not an actual game. So, yeah, I think only your diehards are going to want to make that trek as much as possible. So now, being able to have it in Montreal itself, even if it's that's Big O, which not everybody loves, at the end of the day, you still have a facility that can definitely handle CFL training camp. It's indoors if needed, so inclement weather is not going to be an issue, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, maybe Olympic Stadium's not the most exciting venue in the world anymore, but you know what? I think for training camp, this is a win big time for the Alouettes.
No, even if they have it outdoors, you just get off at Veo Metro Station, because that's where it's right near where Stade Saputo is. So it's it'll be right there. So depending on where it is, you decide which station you're going to get off at, and hopefully the Owls will make that clear, saying if it is outdoors, go to Veo. If it's the Big O, go to Pinneuf.
Yeah, and just really make sure it's as accessible as possible, especially if they're going to be doing sessions inside Olympic Stadium. Like, let the fans get up as up close as possible to it. I mean, if you've never been inside Olympic Stadium, it's not super accessible, which is fine. But at the same time, if you're going to invite fans in to watch practice, make sure that they can see the whole thing. Like, don't just put everybody in the end zone, so to speak.
Which is what they did for practice, which I'm hoping that they don't do. And if need be, I can reach out to the Alouettes and try to find out more specifics. One specific I did find out, by the way, Cliff, from reaching out to our friend Bernard, when it came to the specifics for camp, he goes, the rationale for the move is mainly to get closer to our fans. That's what you and I are just saying. And the fact that we have made an agreement with the Olympic Installations Board on our practice fields facilitated the discussion. It makes the team more accessible to our fans and to the media. It's everything that we've just said. And I'm on board with this. I hope to make it down there more than once.
Well, that's it. And again, you've got to let fans interact with the players, because that's what the Canadian Football League is all about. It's all about being able to reach out and connect with these guys. I mean, even if you don't know some of the younger players and all that, well, this is how you get to know these guys. This is how you get to develop that fandom, that relationship with the players, is through things like training camp and seeing these guys up close and personal, not just watching them from 15 rows up on at the Olympic Stadium.
You gotta
let the fans get there and shake hands and sign autographs and all that stuff. You gotta let the fans get to be a active participant in training camp and all facets of training camp.
Yeah, you can't have and most likely the stadium will be set up in football soccer configuration. Anybody who knows where the seats are in the end zone, they're way too high up and way too far away. I'm hoping that the Owls will set something up if they are indoors where you can go down to the 50 to the you know to the 55 yard line and be able to sit there and watch, because again, as you said, you're closer to the fans that way. And unfortunately, the Big O is not that fan friendly when it comes to football. But I'm sure, you know what? Again, I'll reach out and I'll see if I can get more specifics, and then I will follow up as such. By the way, if there's any talk of the mini camp, it has not been finalized yet if it's going to be in Florida. So any Owls fans who happen to make the trek or any snowbirds who happen to be down there at that time. Don't know yet. And I think it's Saskatchewan and Toronto that are still going down there, I think. I think Saskatchewan announced it already, if I'm not mistaken, that they're going to be in Florida. But I don't remember. So, Cliff, what's your thought on this? Okay, you know, we get the announcement this year that the Owl, you know, like every year, the tryouts for the Alouettes, cheerleaders and stuff like that. And then we find out that the Alouettes are about to become one of the next CFL teams, and there aren't that many, to have male. Are they calling them cheerleaders? Are they actually calling them cheerleaders?
I think they're called cheerleaders.
Because?
Well, I think the term would be cheer team. Oh. And you include both male and female participants.
Yes. Yes, that's what it is. Yeah.
So they would be cheer team members.
Yes. Now, Edmonton has males.
Mm-hmm.
Ottawa? No.
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay. Ottawa does too? Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Calgary? No. It's just the Outriders.
Yeah.
BC Lions?
The Felines they have, but no male participants.
Saskatchewan? Winnipeg?
Nope.
Toronto?
Not that I'm aware of.
Toronto, no. Toronto doesn't. Hamilton?
Where's it going to... Hamilton has a cheer team, but not... I don't believe they have male cheer members.
Okay. It's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see because I don't think that that the cheerleaders were the idea of them doing every, you know, six shows? Six mini vignettes? A game, or is it more than that? It was at least six,
mm-hmm.
one per quarter.
Right.
I didn't find that it was getting old or tiresome. You know, it was in seeing the different cheerleaders from year to year to year. And you know, I've been through 22 years of seeing the different cheerleaders. What's your take on adding the male aspect to that now? I mean, yes, obviously we're going to have ones when it comes to lifts and now I guess we're going to have lifts and spins and whatever. But what's your thought on that? I've never had a team. I've never been a fan of a professional team that's had them. I mean, I am a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they don't have cheerleaders. They've never
at all.
I don't think they've ever had cheerleaders in their history. So this is a little bit new to me, having male cheerleaders. I mean, I know they have it in college basketball. You know, especially the NCAAs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what's your take on that, having the Owls adding the male aspect to the cheer team this year?
It's going to be interesting, I think. I haven't been privy to a whole lot of cheerleading squads that would have male members as well. Like I said, it's something that I think is uncharted territory for the Alouettes, for sure. I mean, again, I guess we'll see. How it's going to go. I mean, I'm for it. I figure, what the hell? I'll be honest. I'm honestly far too preoccupied with football to even notice the cheerleaders themselves more often than not. And I have major respect for the work they do because, believe me, they definitely put in a lot of work. And it's you know, the work that they do within the community is fantastic. So I mean, I will stand up for these gals all day long. And now if you want to introduce some fellas in there as well, hey, why not? The more the merrier, I say. So, I mean, if it makes for a better, more entertaining show, why not? But I'll be honest with you, I usually am too wrapped up in the actual football game itself to really truly notice a cheer team, regardless of whether they have male and or female members. So I'm probably not the best person to ask for that as far as whether it's good or bad. I mean, I'm all for it, like I said. So let's see how it works out. Yeah. And hey, if they can put together some amazing routines, so much the better.
Yeah. Looking at the page right now, Robert, I don't know how he pronounced it, Mark Olivier, Mark Andre, Jean-Philippe, Jean-Michel, and Guillaume. Welcome.
Yes. Welcome to Alouettes Nation.
Welcome to Alouettes Nation. Talk about preseason, the teams, we're talking about games and stuff like that and training camp. And speaking of training camp, the Alouettes, I'm surprised at how they did this because I'm curious to know how many people actually knew that they did this because they didn't really make a big deal out of it. I don't think. I'd have to go to their Facebook page and check again. But for their June 9th home game, that's Saturday, June 9th, preseason home game, which was originally scheduled for 1 p.m., the Alouettes have made the change where they're pushing it back an hour, and it is now going to start at 12. Going to kick off at 12. Reached out to the team to try to find out what was happening, and one thing I completely forgotten about, Cliff, is that that's Grand Prix weekend. I had totally forgotten about that.
Wow, I didn't know that either until you told me, so I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, now Grand Prix weekend, I mean, it's an event all by itself, so...
3 days, yeah, 3 days too, so it's... But the reasoning that I was told, there were a couple of reasons. One was because of that. There was a three... Obviously, they with RDS, I guess that day, I think, for the Canadian Grand Prix, that the qualification is at 3 p.m., so they pushed it back so that, because I think RDS is going to be carrying, I guess, since there are only two RDS channels, but they have two RDS channels. Anyways, I guess they don't want to, it sounds like the game is going to be televised on RDS, just from what I've been told. So the 3 hour block from 12 to 3 will be specifically for the gals, and it won't go into the block for qualification on RDS. Also, it has to do with, they're mentioning that. It has to do with they have to make cut downs, I think, by midnight that night.
Mm.
And, which, yeah, that makes sense, actually. And then I think it also has to do with travel for the Tiger Cats. So I don't think it's much of a big deal. You know, we know what it's usually. It's just a question, will that actually change, Cliff? Obviously, weather will be, could easily be a factor. Let's hope it's nice. It's warm. But do you think that would... Compared to a regular season game, do you think that would make it's going to make any difference when it comes to the fans that may have come out maybe for a 1 o'clock game and they're just like, I got to come and get up and get there another hour earlier just for the for a 12 p.m. kickoff?
I don't think it's going to make a big difference. I think too, I know the diehard fans are going to be chomping at the bit to get some live football in their system, so they'll be up at 6 a.m. and get the tailgate ready in no time. And if you're going to have the game starting at 12 o'clock, then that's just going to add to the all-day party that invariably is a Montreal Alouettes game day. Now, the fact that we've got Grand Prix going on that weekend means that a lot more people are going to be descending down into Montreal. And who knows, maybe if people aren't really all that interested in watching time trials, which is essentially what goes on during Saturdays, but they still want to be a part of the whole Grand Prix experience, why not take in a football game as well? You'll still be able to, you know, the game will be over by no later than 3 o'clock, I'm sure. You still have plenty of time to head back down to Crescent Street and take in all the festivities there. You won't be too far from it either. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think provided tickets aren't exorbitantly expensive, if anything, I think the Alouettes should jump on that and have a special price for preseason game, especially for people coming in for F1.
Oh,
why not do something like that to sort of, not necessarily cross promote, but at least sort of take advantage of the fact that, hey, there's going to be a ton of people here, especially a lot of Americans who them too are going to be dying to see some football action as well. Why not give them a chance to sort of get introduced to the Canadian game, and then once they realize, oh crap, I just was in Montreal and I saw this team play, and I go home and I can watch them on ESPN2 or ESPN3. Dang, that's how you build new fans, as far as I'm concerned. I think an opportunity like this, I think, would be well worth for the Alouettes to explore for this preseason game.
I you know, actually, that's a very good idea. I never even thought about that. You know, some of those fans who can't make it down to Circuit Gilles Villeneuve to watch qualification. I know it's usually an all-day affair because they had some races before and stuff like that. So. That's actually a pretty damn good idea, Cliff.
I have good ideas.
That's a very good idea, Bernard. You listening? So we're in that period now when it came to the off season where we are talking about free agency and, you know, the free agency blitz that we just went through. We wanted to talk about what the Alouettes did in this time with somebody who knows the CFL quite well. And we talked with David Sanchez, and when we get back, we got a couple more things to talk about, and I think there's one subject that I think that really may piss off, I think, a few Alouette fans. Well, I was one of them, but we will talk about that more in a couple of minutes. Now, back with us once again, we're glad to have him with us. It's a man of many, many hats, from being a co-host of the league's official podcast, The Waggle, to doing Alouette's play-by-play, to a hell of a lot more. David Sanchez is with us again. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here. And quick correction, Rick Moffitt is the man behind all the Alouettes broadcasts. I'm just the color guy. The play-by-play man is the great, legendary Rick Moffitt, so we wouldn't want to take that away from Rick. I am simply his sidekick and the color man, the play-by-play man, and the voice of the Owls is none other than the great Rick Moffitt.
That's my error. That's on me. Rick, don't kill me. Rick, don't kill me. is it fair to say, Davis, that the first day of free agency was just absolutely crazier? And I was wondering, have you ever seen that?
I didn't think this year was all that crazy. With the new CBA, there was a lot of names out there prior to free agency, but once noon struck on that, I believe it was a Tuesday, the 13th. But once noon struck, a lot of the big name guys had already been signed.
When you talk about this like that, were you surprised to see these guys actually then a single year contracts because of what's going to possibly surprises?
Yeah, that's a good point. There a lot guys have the understanding, and I rightfully so, that next year when the new CBA gets done, there'll be a jump in the salary cap, which means a jump for the well-deserved salaries for these players. I think the one reason you would sign a multi-year deal, the same reason why, you know, teams will pay these larger signing bonuses, and that's you're only going to get a larger signing bonus when you commit to more than 1 year usually. Now, the one thing that's not often talked about, but is definitely talked about with players and agents, is the U.S. players getting taxed at 15% on the signing bonuses. So you'll notice a lot of U.S. players in particular, I mean, everybody wants a large signing bonus. That's obvious for obvious reasons. That's the only thing in the CFL that guarantees your contract, is the fact that you get a large signing bonus that they cannot take away. But the signing bonus gets taxed at 15%. So a lot of guys will take a larger bonus if possible and have a smaller base salary to save on tax ramification implications. But so if you sign a longer deal, GMs are more inclined to give you a larger signing bonus. So I that's the one reason why guys will sign multi-year deals.
Is that why we're so many players have these offs? Right, if that's the case, a lot of the cause of a lot of why?
Yeah, I think, you know, from an agent standpoint, I think it's important that, you know, guys get their contracts. Agents usually know what they're doing and understand this, but you want to get your off-season bonus early in the off-season. That's, you know, make sure that if you do get released, you get released early and in plenty of time for other teams to pick you up before they spend their money in free agency. So I think that's one of the big things you'll see, is a lot of stuff happening in January in particular. A lot of guys will schedule their off-season bonus for January. That I always do that myself, but I knew one way or the other what I was doing. You don't want to be sitting in limbo waiting until March or April to get a signing bonus to know whether or not you'll be returning with the club.
And we have to go and talk, Cliff, let's go ahead and talk about the key off departures for the Owls, and we've got to get to who the Owls are actually pick up. What's your take, Cliff, on departure? Same thing with you, Davis. If Kyrie's a Bear, that's a whole question. And Jonathan, you know why? Let's see. Chris Graves, Ray Lewis, did they bring anybody?
Dominic Tremanson, who in my opinion I think is the one that he kind of got away, which is unfortunate. I totally get it. I mean, he's a Vancouver kid, so I totally expect him to go and sign with the hometown team with the BC Lions, which he did. But I think that's the one move that if Kavis could do it again, I kind of want to believe that he'd want to give him another chance at it. What do you think about that, Davis?
I agree with you. I like Tremanson a lot. One funny fact with Dominic Tremanson, his first snap on defense for the Alouettes, he got an interception. That was he got thrown into the game. I don't know who got hurt. Probably it was Mintz, or it was someone on the other side. I can't remember who got hurt, but somebody went down. They threw him in the game, and the very first play, of course, what happens? The offensive coordinator up in the booth sees a young Canadian go in a corner right away, calls a play, take a shot deep, knowing, you know, a guy will usually panic when the ball's in the air. It's your first time seeing a ball, and what did Tremanson do? He jumped up and picked the ball off. So off to a great start for a career, but he's a good athlete. He's got good feet. I actually had the pleasure of coaching him a little bit in college, one of his spring camps. I was out there helping the UBC Thunderbirds, and he was out there. I was impressed with him. He wants to listen. He wants to learn, and he's a very good athlete. When I watch him move around, even after I saw him when he was younger, I saw him in the last couple of years out with the Owls. He's got nice feet. I think he has CFL cornerback ability. So I agree with you that it was nobody will talk about Dominic Tomasson as someone they'll miss, but as a project and as a young Canadian, I think that was a loss.
Do you think? Yeah. Do you think really Jonathan made a departure? Sure, he was on track with theirs, but I mean, the Owls is right. So for whatever reason, doesn't make it with the Bears before Trent, because we got the draft cut. He could be back with the Owls.
Yeah, the one thing you have to consider when guys sign NFL contracts, I think as a team, you can keep in the back of your mind that a guy may come back, but I think you have to move forward thinking that they won't come back. And that's because reality is these NFL cuts sometimes don't happen until the end of August, beginning of September. And then guys, there's that cooling off period as well where, you know, a guy wants to sit and say, you know what, I had a pretty good preseason. I did this or this. Especially guys, agents want that cooling off period for a guy to look around, see if another NFL team saw his film and liked what he did in the preseason. So you're not going to get a guy back until early to mid-September. Now, that's, as we know, that's a big chunk of the CFL season gone. So I think teams, you know, move forward thinking that they're not going to have a guy, but knowing there's a chance you get him back for the playoff run. And when you look at the odds of guys making NFL rosters, you definitely got to be in the 20, I would say probably in the 20% range, guys who stick. And I'm just throwing that number out there. But, you know, I think it's got to be somewhere floating around there, under 50%, that's for sure. Actually, under 30% for sure. So you got to think there's a chance to get him back. But the fact you won't get him for a long time, you got to move on without him.
Part of that moving on would obviously have to be the signing of Tommy Campbell, which I think was definitely a shot in the arm as far as repleting that secondary for the Alouettes. What's your take on that?
He's a lockdown, shutdown cornerback. That's what, you know, Tommy is. He has... NFL body. He's a, you know, Tommy Campbell's, if you look at what's happening right now, the best cornerbacks, the guys making $10-12 million a year, they look like Tommy Campbell. They're athletes like Tommy Campbell. He's a legit, you know, 6'3", 6'4" guy who can run like a, you know, run like a 5'9" guy, and he can get in and out of his breaks. He's a guy you can legitimately line up, you know, against any X receiver. That's the short side of the field, wide out. And he can cover any of them. And I think that's his position, though. He's not going to play halfback. Don't know if – I think he's a little too tall and long. You usually want a shorter, quicker guy in there. But you talk about out wide, he reminds me of Brandon Browner, if you guys remember him, of course, as a former Calgary Stampeder and Seattle Seahawks, New England Patriot. He was a Pro Bowl player. So he reminds me a lot of Brandon Browner. And I know a coach who had both of them told me that he actually thinks that Tommy's a better athlete than Brandon Browner.
Well, if that doesn't sell you, Alouettes Nation, I don't know what will.
Yeah, there you go. That was a good signing. I really like that. It costs, but, you know, and for those, any fans or, you know, you hear media outlets discussing that, you know, some players the Al signed might have been overpaid, I think that's ridiculous. Because if you're looking to, you know, that's what free agency is. You're going to pay more than the team that already had somebody paid. That's why they leave. So, yes, you're going to pay more for Tommy Campbell than Calgary would have paid for him. And you know what? If you're the Alouettes, who had the worst record in the league, you're going to pay more because guys are either want to go to a winner. They want to go to a team that's winning. And the Alouettes haven't proved, I don't think they've showed anything, you know, to guys around the league that they were, you know, transcending in that direction. So, yes, you got to pay more, but good for them. Good for Kavis. Good for the Wettenhall family and whoever else is involved in cutting those checks and trying to get better. So, for critiquing a team for paying more, I think is a bit silly.
I agree.
I think it's funny, though. You brought up paying. I was going to ask you about Jamal Westerman, who got that. They were talking specifically about, I mean, people do say if somebody is signed for $150,000, the contract may be structured in a way where if he improved, or, I mean, I've never dealt with a contract, and you have, Dave. Aren't there different ways that $150,000, if it was that can show that he actually overpaced on how many?
What do you mean by that in particular, how it shows?
Well, I mean, sometimes there are things, you have, it could be anything from, you have of different, you know, milestones that you want to get that you're able to get extra money for.
Okay.
You know, it may just be a base salary that he's going to be getting, but the $150,000, if that's what it is, could be based off of base salary.
You think that Jamal Westerman, I'll say this, Jamal Westerman's contract may have some incentives in it, but the numbers that you're hearing, the $200,000 or $195,000 or $205,000, those are not incentives. That's hard money.
Okay.
Jamal Westerman is sought at, and you're right, that does happen for some guys, but not for one of the league's best Canadian players
a guy, a pass rusher at that. He's got two things working. One, defensive ends are some of the highest paid guys in any league. Two, he's Canadian, and so he would not sign a contract that was full of incentives. He may get incentives, but if he hits the incentives, that might put him up, you know, up into the, if he does have this,
right,
it's going to put him up into the 250 range. It's not going to put him up to the 200 range. He'll get 200 without, he could probably get zero sacks and play three games and still get 200. He's worth that much. So his money would be hard money. And it's, otherwise you're not getting a player of Jamal Westerman's caliber. Chris Williams is an example of a guy who might have an incentive-laden contract. I know he did last year at BC. He was unproven. He had a good years previous to that, but he's coming off an ACL injury. He's somebody. There's an example of someone who might have a contract that might say, hey, he's making $130, but if he gets back to being the old Chris Williams and gets an all-pro, he's a CFL all-star and has, you know, leads the league or leads the East in receptions, now all of a sudden he might be back up to that 200 range that he used to make. So that's an example of a guy that would be having an incentive-laden contract.
Maybe the Alouettes are that. Maybe, with the same thing that happened with, can come back from a BF4.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. He's got the skill set to do it.
Now, the Alouettes, one of their key signings before free agency started was the re-upping of Tyrell Sutton, because again, the guy is an absolute beast on the field and proves it year in, year out. But then they went ahead and they traded Brandon Rutley and JC Bollier, who are essentially his backups, and now we've got pretty much a empty backfield with the exception now of adding Shaq Murray Lawrence. With him being Canadian, though, don't you think that kind of makes things a little more, I guess, as far as the ratio goes, do you think that's going to affect things? Or do you think there's so much happening on defense when it comes to Canadians that it won't even affect anything on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, with a running back, you know, the importance of a running back, and in particular, what Tyrell Sutton brings for that offense, I think you keep him on the field as much as you can, and you try to shuffle your ratio around in other places. Now, you know, if Shaq Murray Lawrence proves that he can be the number two guy, he beats out, you know, whoever the Owls bring in camp or whoever ends up ultimately being the number two, because Sutton is, there's no question he's the number one. Then maybe you use him in a place where, you know, example would be on second down. You want to give Sutty a rest. You take him out, put in Shaq Murray Lawrence, and then you can bring in an American receiver out there and pull out one of the Canadian receivers and kind of mess with your ratio that way. That's one of the ways that gives you flexibility.
Now, what are your thoughts on Dominique Ellis and Mitchell White, who used to be Alouettes back in 2016, were cut unceremoniously at the end of training camp and didn't leave under the best circumstances as far as possible conflicts with defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe at the time. Now that Thorpe and Jim Popp are no longer in the picture, does that make coming home, so to speak, a lot easier for those guys?
I don't know. Flippy, you could probably tell me better than, you know, give us a thought of what the fans thought about those guys bringing them back. I mean, that's kind of something that you would know a little bit better than you know, people out here. What's the thought process when these guys that the fans want back and were benefits of the team?
Well, I can't speak for every single fan, because I think everybody's still all up in arms over Anthony Calvillo possibly going to the Argos. But strictly from my point of view, I'm very excited to see Mitchell White back and Dominique Ellis, because these are both together. They were absolutely incredible playing. They played mostly on the boundary and they were outstanding. Whether they're going to still remain in that spot, especially with Tommy Campbell and Tavon Campbell and Chris Ackie, all these guys in the secondary right now, I mean, there's so much. It's, again, without knowing exactly what Khalil Carter has in mind as far as now that he's defensive coordinator, I mean, there's so many possibilities right now that I personally can't help but be excited. But, I guess it just makes me wonder, though, as far as, like, White and Ellis didn't leave under the best circumstances, but now they're back as though, you know, like nothing happened, which is, to me, I think, a little bit fascinating.
Yeah, and with Mitchell White, different scenario than Dominique Ellis. Mitchell White, you know, left, was a Grey Cup champion, was one of the best corners in the league last year. So I think he comes over, you know, in a different situation. I think Dominique Ellis had kind of worn out his welcome in Hamilton. He fell out of favor with the coaching staff. I know that out there. So I'm not sure what his reason is for bringing him back. I don't know who on the staff wanted him back. Obviously, someone has some history with him. I don't know if Kavis would have been with him at all, but was Kavis with him at all? Yeah, Kavis would have been with him. So maybe Kavis likes him. But he fell out of favor. So I think his Dominique situation, he will be a guy who's got to go to training camp and he's got to earn a job just like every other DB that's coming in, you know, all the rookies coming in. There's going to be a lot of talented guys coming in, but he has that advantage because he has CFL experience. But Mitchell White's an all-star, and he's going to lock down a spot for sure. So I don't know what the fans think about it either, but in regards to personnel, Mitchell White is going to lock. That's one position you don't have to worry about, wherever he plays. And I have a strong feeling you try Mitchell White inside at a halfback position. And I say that because I don't know what the plans are for Tavon Campbell, but I think he showed enough that you got to, ratio-wise, you got to give him a shot at that field corner. So I would give Tavon Campbell a shot at that field corner. Tommy Campbell is playing the boundary corner, so now where does Mitchell White go? He's been a field corner most of his career, but I think he's good enough to play field half or somewhere else if need be.
Now,
safe to say that however bad things were in Montreal secondary last year, they are that much better this year. Would you agree?
Safe to say. Yep, no doubt about it. Now, What's up with Chip Cox? What's up with Chip Cox? Someone tell me.
He was supposed to be on the retired list, and then all of a sudden he's not. So I don't know, to be honest with you. Because one of the areas that...
he's on the official roster. It's something.
I guess he unretired.
He's on the
then.
Official roster?
Well, I'm looking at the active roster for the Alouettes. Chip Cox is listed.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
I'm going to pose this to both of you because I have one. If you did one of the Alouettes, not under one that people looked, they don't really look at it that much, really that important. Of all the, is there any particular who the Owls fit that? And I'll say as the quietest free agent signing that the Owls had, even though it's very important, Drew Willey. He probably has more experience as a starter than the rest of the Alouettes combined.
Yeah, I agree. For me, you want me to go first? I like the signing of Joe Burnett. Joe Burnett from Calgary, and the reason is because Joe Burnett plays the toughest position in the secondary. He can play that Sam spot, and Joe Burnett played Sam linebacker for the Calgary Stampeders, one of the best defenses in the league, and then he played it for Khalil Carter, so he knows exactly how to play in that defensive scheme, which is important. So you get a veteran guy. Joe Burnett's not a bum. Joe Burnett's a good football player. So you get a guy like Joe Burnett who knows the system, who plays the toughest spot on the defense, that Sam linebacker. You get him signed and get him over there. That's a huge signing, and probably not one many Owls fans or even CFL fans are talking about, but that to me is the biggest signing in the offseason, the quietest big signing.
For me, I'm going to say it's Kyle Knox because – talking about Chip Cox, like when it comes to the linebacker position, I mean, we thought we had everything all secured with Kyrese Hébert, but that got kind of thrown to the wind. So right now we've got a lot of, in addition to Cox, we've got a lot of youngsters that are maybe now going to have to fill that void for not just Hébert, but for the other positions in the linebacking core. For me, I think Kyle Knox, he's one of those players that I guarantee nobody in Montreal knows who the heck he is, but I have a feeling once training camp starts, people are going to sit up and take notice of him pretty quick. Putting him alongside Brandon Dozier, and if they can re-sign Reggie Northrup, I think that's going to be a good, young, scary linebacking core.
I'm confused as to how Reggie Northrup is a free agent. He's only been there for a year. How did that happen?
I don't know. He was on the list, and as of now...
I saw him on the list, too. I don't know how it happened, because he can't sign a one-year deal as a rookie, so I'm not sure. Unless they released him, I'm not sure what happened.
Either that, or maybe he was a practice roster ad very late.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Obviously, the Alouettes, the Owls, and Owls fans to forward bigger and better things. If you were, I think it's happened so far in the free agency, stuff like that, if you're looking at the upcoming, we'll talk about, but is there any bit the Alouettes at?
Well, yeah, you know, I've said it over and over again, and I'll say it now. I hate to sound like a broken record, but I really do feel like this roster, talent-wise, is at the bottom of the league, has the most holes in it. Now, you know me, I'm an Owl through and through, and that's my favorite team. But I also get paid to be honest and give honest opinions, and that's my opinion. I think so. To answer your question, there's on any level. You know, whether it's up front, whether it's in the linebacking core, whether it's a young Canadian receiver, the Owls could use help, young talent and all those. So I think, you know, the reality is that this team has got to build, and no one wants to talk about rebuilding because we've seen what in the CFL, and Ottawa went from 2-16 to the Grey Cup. So, you know, and the CFL is not like other leagues. You don't have to rebuild for 5 years. You can pick up a piece or two and all of a sudden have a shot, especially in the East. So I don't think the Owls necessarily need to, you know, count themselves out and not have an opportunity to win. If Josh Freeman comes in and lights up the world, who knows? Defense gets on fire, who knows? But I would say you've got to at least draft thinking about a couple of years down the road. And so for that reason, I would look at a, you know, maybe a young, a good young Canadian offensive lineman that's going to be a pillar of your team, you know, a Jeff Parrott or, you know, somebody like that, that you know you're going to have for 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road. That's what I would look for, because there's no one player in the draft, no impact player, especially a skill guy that's going to, any guy, to be honest, that's going to come in and have enough impact on this team as a Canadian rookie that's going to make a big difference in a great Cup championship. I take someone that I think could be around for a long time, a Brian Chu, or maybe a great center or a tackle, someone that you know is going to be a solid Canadian for a long time.
Now, that being said, if you were the GM, would you, that can help?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I would say no, because just for the reason I just mentioned, that if you're trying to build your team, I don't think this Alouettes team is going to win the East this year. I don't think they're gonna have the best overall record. I think they could win. They could make it to the playoffs. Just as I don't see why they can't make the playoffs in the East if they get some quarterback play. But that being said, I think that, you know, I wouldn't mortgage my future to add a player, because what's that player? I mean, I'm pretty sure Brock Sunderland's not gonna trade away Mike Riley for a first round pick, and I don't think Huff's gonna trade away Bo Levi Mitchell. So unless someone's offering up those two guys, I don't know who else you're going to offer up that's really going to change the dynamic of your team that much to mortgage the future.
That's not a bad idea, though. So if Huff and Sundy are listening, you never know, right? I mean, I wouldn't be totally opposed to having a Mike Riley or a Bo Levi Mitchell in Montreal. I'm not taking anything away from Josh Freeman or any of the other youngsters, but hey, a good idea is a good idea.
Well, Bo, I think Bo's a free agent after next season, so maybe that's about the only way you're getting that guy.
We know there's no way in hell that's happened, at least not this season.
No. Never say never in the CFL, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. No. Obviously, Davis, we thank you. Insight in the waggle. You know you're... you have anything else good besides the...
No, everything else is completely top secret. No, I don't say anything. And I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on, too. And I appreciate what you guys do. And keep up the good work. And you know what? It's, you know, for all of... You know, every city has guys like you guys who, you know, are passionate about it and put out a good product. And you know, you're kind of a voice for the fans in the city, and so it's appreciated, and I know I appreciate it, and I appreciate you guys taking time to reach out and have me on. But everything at CFL.ca, that's where you can find me, and you know, I'm part of that crew over there that puts out any of the content, any of the analyzation pieces are usually I'm a part of, and we have a live show called CFL This Week, and that'll be every Thursday in the season, every Thursday. We'll travel to wherever city the game is, and we'll have a live pregame show. Before TSN kicks off, we'll be there doing our live show, and that's called CFL This Week. And also, you'll find me at TSN Monday Night Football. I do the pre- and post-game show for Sports Desk on Monday Night Football. So those are the places you can find me.
I know. You need football stuff? Davis is your guy. That's all there is to it.
And even better, I called it Sports Desk. That just tells you how old school I am. And I'm definitely not. I'm definitely on Sports Center, not Sports Desk.
You're right. Oh my God, you're right. I missed that one.
Tell you what, though. Hey, that's it. But if you're an old school Canadian that's been watching TSN as long as I have been watching, then you know what Sports Desk is. You know why I'm referencing it. But we're on Sports Center, and CFL This Week is our show. On CFL.ca, along with Brody Lawson and all the rest of the content people at CFL.ca.
Perfect. Well, again, we appreciate your time, Dave, and we'll from the
yes, and you and Rick. Don't forget about Rick.
I won't
forget about Rick. He's the man. He is the man with the plan, and it's all about Rick Moffitt. Let's not forget that, because without Ricky, we're all in trouble.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Davis.
Thanks, guys.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, AlouettesPodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
So thanks again for Davis for joining us. That's a great insight. The guy knows what he's talking about. Anything else that we didn't cover within the topic of free agency that you wanted to at least mention? I mean, I mentioned it slightly within the interview when it comes to Kyrie's a Bear, not happy at all, but we don't know the full story behind it. But still losing somebody like Kyrie Zubair, and it's funny, him going back to Ottawa, he's the only original Ottawa Renegade left in the CFL.
He's the last man standing for the former Renegades. And I guess it's kind of poetic for him to kind of, I guess he'll end up finishing his career with the Ottawa Red Blacks. I mean, like I said, he is still, as far as I'm concerned, the Benjamin Button of the Canadian Football League. Guy gets older in age, but plays with such useful energy. Like, he looks younger out there. And if you ever go on Instagram and see his training videos, I mean, the guy is a beast through and through.
Beast mode.
I mean, my word. It's unfortunate because we've gotten to know Kyrie, especially over the last 6 years, and it's just a gentleman through and through. So on a personal note, I am very happy that he can still continue his football career. It's just really unfortunate that it won't be as a member of the Alouettes anymore. So I get why maybe the team would want to move forward, or why they would want to start changing up, especially with a new defensive coordinator, new defensive coaching staff. Maybe they take a look at what Kyrie has to offer, and maybe they want to kind of alter things for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm of the opinion that I think things would have worked out just fine leaving Kyrie as is with the Alouettes, but clearly the coaching staff didn't agree, and Kyrie certainly didn't agree either. So there's just sort of a mutual parting of the ways, and now he's an Ottawa Red Black. So that's great for the Red Blacks fans, or for our nation. They should be very excited because they are definitely getting a high caliber quality human being, a great football player and a great guy as well. So I guess our loss is your gain, Ottawa. I mean, like I said, you got some really good guys on that team, and Kyrie's is definitely going to step up and be, and you're seeing it already. He's already stepping up and being a big part of the Ottawa community already. Even though his roots are pretty much now in Montreal, he still wants to be very much a part of the scene in Ottawa as well. So, you know, my hat's off to him, and I definitely wish him all the best, except for, of course, the games that he'll be playing in against the Alouettes, naturally. But, you know, that's business, and we'll just be friends off for those 3 hours per game. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, any of the thing that stood out? I know we went into it in quite detail. Anything else that the Owls did that surprised you or didn't do?
Well, I think the one thing that overall makes me laugh more than anything else is that anonymous report that came out just before free agency kicked off that nobody was going to sign with the Alouettes and everyone was going to be staying away from the Alouettes and all that, which, again, like everything else, turns out to be fake news. And now the report, you know, the reports had also come out that the Alouettes are going to have to overpay people. And as our friend Davis mentioned, like, well, of course they're going to have to overpay. That's what free agency is. You're overpaying. Well, you're not overpaying, but you're paying more to get someone's services than what their previous team is doing. So that by the very definition is what free agency is all about. You're looking to improve your team, and yeah, it's going to cost you sometimes. Now, I don't think the Alouettes are going to blow their brains out every single time. And if that's all it's going to take to get football players, then there are far bigger problems within the organization than realized. But I think now a lot of the players, especially the players that have signed here, they have to realize that, okay, this isn't the quote-unquote dumpster fire of 2017 or even 2016. I think they realize that with the new coaching staff in place and a much more established pecking order, if you will, as far as the front office goes, as far as I'm concerned, I think a lot of players that have signed here see what's happening, seeing that there's changes being made for the better, and they want to be a part of that. They want to be a part of something big, and God willing, that's what's going to be happening now with Montreal, is that they've made the right moves. At least we hope they have. I mean, time will only tell whether these moves are going to work or they're not going to work, whether these coaches are going to work or not going to work. And I think that's part of what's so exciting about it is that we don't know what's going to happen exactly. I mean, this team could catch fire and become a real force in the Canadian Football League, or we could just be back to the same old patheticness that was the past couple of years. I mean, but we can't say for certain it's going to be one or the other. Until training camp starts, until we see these coaches actually interacting with these players and putting everything into place, there's so much we don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, this team has made moves to get better. I have to believe this team is going to get better. And like I said, I'm going to focus on the positive more than anything else. I think what the Alouettes have done has made a statement. Kavis Reid has made a statement saying, you know what? Last year was last year. We're past that. We're on to the next. We're moving forward. We're aiming to get better. And this is his chance, really. It's either he does it now or it's never going to happen. Simple as that. So I'm choosing to focus on the positive. I'm choosing to focus on the moves that were made. I'm encouraged by these moves, and I think Alouettes fans should be very encouraged as well with what's been done in free agency.
Yeah, and obviously time will tell. So, I mean, the draft's coming up, and that still could play a decent part in what this team's going to look like, and it could easily impact the team quite a bit, but we'll find out. We'll find out.
Well, that's with having the first overall pick, I mean, pretty much they have their pick of the litter. They can choose whoever they want to start off with, or they could take that pick and trade it for more picks or for someone else that they feel could be a major asset going forward. And I think that's part of the fun of the draft is, well, one, seeing who's out there, like see which young potential Canadian studs are out there that can help make this team better, focus on where the Alouettes need to improve on, and just speculate as to just who will be selected by the Alouettes to help make this team better. I think that's one of the fun things about the Canadian Football League and the draft process is that we're trying to see who's going to make your football team better. And especially with Montreal, like since, you know, I guess the one benefit, if you want to call it that, of finishing dead last in the CFL is, yes, you do get the first overall pick. And every other pick that comes after that is fairly high as well. So what will the Alouettes do to improve this team? Like that's going to be stuff we'll talk about over the next few weeks as the combine happens and the draft happens, is figuring out just what do the Alouettes need to do to get better? Where do they need to draft to improve their stock, and what's going to happen as a result? To me, that's what makes this off season long, but stuff like this helps make the time go by and also makes it exciting too.
That's true. So before we finish up this first off-season show in our first of 2018, a report came over the wire about a week ago or so that a certain Alouettes GOAT Hall of Famer, former coach, would be heading to the Toronto Argonauts to become a quarterbacks coach. And if anybody don't know who I'm talking about, Anthony Calvillo. What kind? And I was not happy. I was really because what was the comment that I made on Twitter that I was now official? The Alouettes have moved to Toronto. I think that's what my comment was on social media. What I don't get, and I mentioned this in my tweet, is that Anthony specifically said in an article in January to Herb Zerkowski that in no uncertain terms would he be going to Toronto if Mark Trestman and Jim Popp came calling. He wanted to take some time off, possibly go catch on with a U Sport team, do some coaching that way. But and I don't think he lied, Cliff. I think it just the opportunity was given to him. You know, if it hadn't been for Marcus Brady going to the Colts, this wouldn't have happened. In my honest opinion, I think if Marcus Brady had stayed with the Argos, AC would not have joined the Argonauts. But
that's
go ahead.
I was going to say that's a fair point.
But my thought was this: after reflecting on this, I can't hate AC for this. It is, in essence, being able to coach Ricky Ray if this ever gets announced officially. He's going to be able to be the quarterback's coach for Ricky Ray, and you can think of it as such as if you can call Ricky Ray being a mentor to a newly minted, because that's really what he is, a newly minted quarterback's coach, very similar to what AC did when he was under Tracy Ham. You know, he's under Mark Trestman. So, you know, to become a better coach, if he wants to continue his coaching career in the CFL, because you and I both, you know, it was fairly known that you and I both had our reservations with him last year.
Mm-hmm.
So while I hate to see him in the double blue, it hurts me a lot more seeing him in the double blue than it is Mark Trestman or even Jim Popp. But just to see AC on the sideline in the double blue, just it still hurts. It still hurts.
Yeah, no, it's completely understandable to feel that way. And believe me, you're not alone with that. Lots of fans, LOS fans, are just apoplectic, quite frankly, about this news. And I can't say I blame them. I understand why they'd be upset, and I can understand why some people would see it as treason almost. The fact that Anthony Calvillo, who's so beloved here in Montreal, is essentially joining the enemy, so to speak. I mean, for him to go to Toronto just seems unfathomable. But I'm very much of the opinion that this is definitely going to be the best thing for his coaching career. One, any sort of inadequacies or shortcomings that he's had are immediately going to be covered by both Jim Popp and Mark Trestman. No one's going to be asking him to be the hero like he invariably was here with the Alouettes. I think this is going to be a much more structured environment with Trestman there. Mark Trestman knows Anthony Calvillo up and down, inside and out. So he knows what he can do. He knows what AC can bring and essentially what he can't bring, which is not a bad thing because, again, I've always felt that ever since he took on the role of being a coach in the Canadian Football League, Anthony Calvillo has still been trying very hard to become a coach. I don't think he's ever been truly given a chance because for any number of reasons, I think his coaching career has just been thrown for a loop over and over and over again. And I think it's been done more harm to him than any good. So I think if he's really truly serious about being a coach, I would have preferred to him to go to a U Sports team or even a CEGEP or even a high school just to really truly learn what it's like to be a coach, to really pay your dues, put the time in to really truly coaching without any pressure of trying to save an organization. And I think that's where the problem was. Every time the Alouettes would falter, they defer back to Calvillo with the thought that, well, you saved us as a quarterback. I'm sure you can save us as a coach, but honestly, and last year was proof positive that he just didn't have the coaching chops. And that's not his fault. I don't blame AC for that one bit. There's tons of other people to blame as far as to why Anthony Calvillo was not a very good coach for the Alouettes. Anthony Calvillo is not to blame for that. So I think this is the best possible scenario for him is to go somewhere else where he doesn't have to be the hero. Coaching Ricky Ray sounds pretty easy when you think about it. Maybe this is really what he needs, that sort of shot in the arm to really get himself back on track. Like I said, Trestman's going to be working with him as well. We all know what Mark Trestman can do. If that relationship between Trestman and Calvillo can be further strengthened now as both coaches, I think that's the best possible thing for AC at this point. And we'll get to see just what kind of a coach he can truly become. Could he be that next great coach? Maybe. Or will he still be considered a failure? Which I sincerely hope not, because again, I only want the best for AC, not just as a fan, but as a football fan, I want the best possible coaches out there. And as far as how the future holds, could AC come back and be a head coach in Montreal? Maybe, but it's got to start slowly. And I think the key for him now is to really properly learn under Trestman. Jim Popp's going to give him every opportunity to succeed as far as I'm concerned. And let's just see what he does, not just with Ricky Ray, but now they've got James Franklin in Toronto. Cody Fajardo played a little bit last year, and he's still a young quarterback that can be molded. If Anthony Calvillo can help mold these youngsters the way that he should have been molding some of the youngsters in Montreal,
yeah,
I honestly think that maybe something can happen. Maybe Anthony Calvillo can salvage his coaching career. And if that means eventually coming back to Montreal, a much better coach than what he was the first time around, hey, I'm all for that. But it's got to happen organically. It can't be forced. I mean, you can't just keep dumping everything on him. And I know that's not going to happen in Toronto. I think he's going to have a much better support staff there than he ever did here in Montreal. And once again, we'll see what the future holds for AC if he ever does come back. But I think where Montreal is right now, they're going in one direction. And I just don't think AC was ever going to be a part of that direction. So I think it's just better for AC to sort of forge his own path, even if it means teaming up again with some familiar friends. I think it can only be a good thing for him. And while Alouettes fans are understandably upset, just know that this really will be the best thing for him. You may not agree with me now. You may not agree with me a year from now. But if Anthony Calvillo is truly destined to be a great coach in the Canadian Football League, we will see that eventually. But it's got to happen at his pace. You got to let him properly develop. And let's not forget, AC the player took a little while to get going as well. But once he did, It was outstanding. So maybe that's what it is. And what happened? Changed the scenery. He was floundering in Hamilton, came to Montreal, had a chance to learn from some greats, and became the legend that we all know and love. So maybe lightning will strike twice with AC. It just, unfortunately, it won't be here in Montreal. It may have to happen in Toronto. So I guess we'll see what happens with that one. I mean, I obviously wish him all the best. I can't say enough good things about AC. You know that. It would have been nice for him to be that hero here in Montreal, but just wasn't going to happen. And that's the sad reality, is it just was not going to happen.
Not yet.
No. So, I mean, this can only be good for Toronto. And honestly, I feel confident enough in the coaching staff that we have in place now that, again, it won't be perfect, but when all said and done, both teams are going to be better for the experience.
It's fair. As I said, you got to look at it in different ways. It's like we're looking at the team coming up, but there's a lot more off season to go. I said, we got the draft coming up and more to talk about. So it'll be very interesting. So we will be back within the off season before the season begins. We can guarantee you that. And hopefully we have a few more announcements to make to you, the fans, in the very, very near future. Just check out and watch us on social media. And whether it be Cliff's account, Twitter account, my Twitter account, or the Alouettes Flight Deck account, and we'll keep you up to date on anything that we find out Owls related and show related. So Cliff, it was great catching up with you, bud. Thanks again to Davis for joining us, and I will be talking to you soon.
Yeah, and by all means, if you loved what you heard from Davis, be sure you go check out CFL.ca. Go listen to The Waggle. It's definitely a great show with him and James Cebulski. Shoot Davis a follow on Twitter. It's at Davis Sanchez. Absolutely great guy. And I can't say enough good things about him. Thank you again so much for joining us on the Flight Deck. You're always welcome back anytime.
Cool. So we'll be talking to you very shortly, we promise. So everybody here at the Flight Deck for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off!
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.